You're listening to Bigfoot Live, starring Thomas Gardy, the world's most respected authority on the phenomena known as Bigfoot. Sit back and relax as we take you on a journey into the world of the unknown. Believer or skeptic, man or woman, you will be mesmerized by real people telling real descriptions about real encounters. Fasten your seatbelts, America. It's reality radio at its finest, and it starts now.
In 1967, my whole life changed. I went to the libraries, find out all I could find out about Bigfoot. We went out to prove that this creature exists.
I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator. You see something big like that, you figure, well, maybe it'll come charging.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized there was something special and probably Sasquatch.
Yes, Bigfoot lives.
We're looking at something that's probably over 500 pounds.
When you hear screams, breaking day, we hear these siren-type screams.
But it is like everything else. They just were too realistic to be frozen like a tree.
The hand was
freaking
into the woods.
Female.
Bigfoot lives. Bigfoot lives. Right now. At www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
You think I've seen some strange, you know. Sasquatch sitting on his typist knee, and he was talking to Moxon Joe. Well, for a little hell, out in the St. John's Wall, Sasquatch doing his brand new dance, and he called it the Bigfoot Star.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Marco Bill on the Bigfoot Live broadcast. And folks, it's that time of the week again. It's time for the Wednesday evening Bigfoot Live radio show with our host, Mr. Tom Biscardi. And now everybody, the man who put the big back into Bigfoot, our host and renowned Bigfoot researcher, Mr. Tom Biscardi. Good evening, Tom. How are you tonight?
Top drawer, my friend. Top drawer. I got to tell you. The
quick
things
on
that
the horn, too.
Huh?
You're quick on the horn, too.
Thanks to you, of course. Ladies and gentlemen, I got to tell you, this weather situation across this country is totally incredible, okay? You hear about we're having earthquakes here and there and tsunamis here and there. We've been in weather like you won't believe. I mean, it's gone from 8 below to 22 above. And then there's people experiencing 85-degree temperature in California. So I have no clue. I have no idea what the hell's going to happen. But I know that it's erotic as hell. I've been doing a ton of interviews because of our new movie. You've heard about it, The Anatomy of a Bigfoot Hoax. Okay? It's been redone. It's totally incredible. When you see it, it's action from the beginning to the end. And it was filmed in real time, ladies and gentlemen. That's the key here. This isn't no remake. This ain't no phony crap. What you're seeing is what you're going to get. All the questions that you had about the Anatomy of a Bigfoot Hoax will be answered. It's up on our website, searchingforbigfoot.com. You order from us, you'll have it probably within 3 or 4 days. You go through Amazon.com with their PayPal or whatever, how they do it over there. I don't know how long it takes. I think you have to pay extra to get it quick, but they're pretty good at getting it to you also. Nevertheless, whether it's through Amazon, through us, through filmbaby.com or whatever, get it. You need to hear and see the true story for yourself. This movie is probably going to win for best documentary across this country at a bunch of film festivals. One of our producers are going to start entering this thing, and I'll tell you what, I've seen it now a bunch of times, and every time I see it, I see something new, and it just sparks that day in my life, August 15th, 2008, which will go down in infamy someday. because I will never, ever forget it. But nevertheless, we got into some heavy-ass conversations last week, and we always run out of time. And I understand that Leroy Blevins' wife was rushed to the hospital. Hope there's nothing too serious, Leroy. But we'll have you back on next week. And anything we can do, don't hesitate to ask. And we're going to have Rob Price coming back on here pretty soon to get back into him telling that story. Because I'll tell you what, folks, that was some of the most hairiest times I had experienced in a long time. But without any further ado, what I want to do is we've had Paul and Jesus from Canada on the show before talking about their encounter that they experienced the full moon out on a golf course. And what they found wasn't a hole-in-one. They found a big, hairy creature charging them instead. Without any further ado, I want to get out there and find this out myself because I didn't talk to these guys the first time. Paul, Jesus, you guys out there?
Yeah, we're here. Hello.
How you doing, buddy?
Pretty good. Just here in Canada enjoying the cold.
What is the weather like up there?
Over here, there's just a little bit of snow. It's pretty much melting, but at nighttime, it's pretty cold.
Give my audience a little degree temperature. What is cold?
The thing is with the temperature, it's a lot different than American temperature. Over here right now, it's negative 10. Don't know what that would be with your temperature, but it's pretty cold.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what, I've been up in Montana, and it's been pretty damn cold up there also. We were 38 miles away from the Canadian border.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we were in the Tri-Mountains region up there, and from the regions there, you could see Canada. So without any further ado, and you are Paul, is that correct?
Yes, this is Paul.
Okay, Paul. Why don't you bring my audience up to date, and let's hear the story, what you experienced the first time.
All right. In 2009... I was hired in this golf course to do landscaping. This golf course is just outside of my city, and around the golf course there's nothing but pretty much forest and farmland. That's all around it, a couple creeks and things like that. On May 5th in 2009, me and my friend went out on the golf course at night, and we were walking around, and my friend went to spark his cigarette. When he sparked his cigarette, we were basically, we stopped in our tracks because we heard this really loud, sort of like a siren scream, and we thought maybe it was someone that caught us on the property because it was private property and we weren't supposed to be there, even though we did work on that thing, on the golf course, and basically we ducked down and we just tried, we were scared, so we tried to crawl away, and when we got up, we realized that it wasn't a person, that it was this big, hairy thing, and it was standing there, and it was yelling at the top of his lungs, and I basically went into shock when I was staring at it. I didn't know what to believe. Like, I could see it, and it was huge. It had fur all over it. Its eyes were glowing like a cat or a dog's do. And the moon was just enough so you could see it from the distance. And then this thing started charging, yelling at the top of its lungs. And I couldn't move. My knees went weak. I just went complete shock, and I couldn't even run. And then my friend Jesus grabbed me, and we took off running. And this thing chased us around there, and we took off to this one path, and we just kept running. I didn't even bother looking back after that. He looked back, and he saw it chasing us. And he said, keep running, and he was grabbing onto his rosary praying. And we just kept running until we were out of breath, and we hopped in the car and drove off. Right when we drove off, I had to roll the window down for some air because I couldn't believe what just happened. It was something like out of the movies, and I almost threw up. It was a pretty crazy experience. After that, I've had nightmares about that exact night, and I always wake up sweating and always wondering what it was. But at first I thought it was a ghost because of its eyes, because the way it glows. And so I did research on that, and I came across your website and the thing you had on YouTube. And when I was listening to the recordings that you had on Bigfoot, I heard the exact same sound. And when I heard it, I rushed to show my friend on YouTube, and that was the exact same sound we heard that night. So if it wasn't for that experience, I don't think we would ever have believed in Bigfoot at all. We would have just thought it was just something else, like aliens or something else like that. But the fact that we had that experience and we ran from this thing makes us hard believers. This thing was pretty big, and it smelled horrible. The wind was blowing towards us, and we could smell it. It smelled like dirty socks and ass and everything you can think of. It smelled horrible. And the thing just screamed really loud. It felt like he was screaming in our ears, like it had the lungs of a giant, I guess. And everything around us, like we were like in an open field, and everything around us in the trees, all the birds and whatever were in the trees all jumped out. It scared the hell out of me and Jesus. We talk about this all the time. We told a couple of our friends and family. Some of us believe us. Some of them think we're a joke and they laugh about it. But we know what happened that night. We know what happened that night. Hello?
Let me ask you this, Paul.
Yes.
That don't believe you, what do they say about you?
They think I'm crazy, pretty much. They just think I'm crazy, but when me and Jesus are both there, sitting there, looking these people right in the eyes and telling them our story, then they believe us. I've actually brought a group of my friends there a couple of times, and every time we go there and I'm telling them my story, they just want to get out of the place because they get creeped out and they get pretty scared.
Have you had any encounters since then?
No, I haven't, but I have gone back to the place many times before, and I'm planning to go back there tonight.
Okay, so let me ask you this. You said
yes.
It happened in May, right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, that's the right month in which these things do travel again, because between April, May, and June, they're out traveling again, migrating. And it's,
mm-hmm.
you know,
I didn't know that. I didn't know that at all, actually.
Is there a bunch of waterways where you live?
Like creeks. There's a bunch of creeks and stuff around here. Yes, there's.
Okay.
And there's lots of deer, lots of rabbit. And there's lots of like raspberry bushes around.
So there's
was working on the golf course, I'd go off to the side and pick a few berries and eat it myself.
Mm-hmm. Okay. There's ample vegetation and water for them to eat and drink, right?
Oh yeah, plenty of that.
Okay. Is there any type of caves or underground mines or anything of that sort in that area?
I was told that there is, but I don't know where they are. I was talking to some of the locals around the area. I told them my story, and some of them laughed, and some of them believed me. A couple of the farmers told me that there was a couple of caves and a couple of mines, but I never went to them. So, yeah.
So, let me ask you this.
Okay.
Were you a believer before, or were you a non-believer?
I was a non-believer.
Okay.
Like, I remember seeing things about it, but I never thought much of it. It was just a movie to me. That's
okay.
All it was.
Okay. What did your friend think? Jesus.
Jesus? Would you like to speak with him?
I would.
Right here.
He's there. Okay. He's there, Tom.
Hey, Jesus. How are you?
Hi. How are you?
I'm well. Listen, we heard what Paul had to say, and I guess you had steady nerves when he was in a panic mode, and you got him and said, hey, let's get the heck out of here, and ran like hell.
I got them from his shirt, and I pulled them, because my buddy, he froze, and he pretty much was just staring at this thing, couldn't even keep his eyes off it. I remember running and holding my rosary and just praying, telling my friend to just run and run and not look back. But I remember I did look back for a split second, and I did see the thing still coming after us. I told him to just keep running towards the car. Eventually, like, we looked back, and it was gone. but you could even hear, like, the footsteps as it ran.
How big do you think it was, Jesus?
I would say at least 10 feet.
What color were the eyes?
Pardon?
What color were the eyes?
They were like a glowing, like, it was like a cat eye. It was like that glowing, like, orangey kind of color.
Orangey, huh? Okay.
Yeah, it was just kind of, it glowed with, I guess it was a reflection as well with the moon. The moon was out pretty hard that night. It was a full moon.
So if it was a full moon, you could pretty much see around its hair and everything. Did you get to see its face at all?
Yeah, you could see, like, around everywhere. Like, you could see the fields perfectly, so you could see pretty much what was around. That's why Paul, like, got a good, really, like, good look at it. And I was pretty much in shock as soon as I heard the yell as well. I was pretty much just looking around where it came from because it had, like, such power, like, lungs. It pretty much just echoed all around us and stuff. And Paul got a glitch of it. Like, I kind of looked at it, but I kind of looked more at Paul, and I decided we got to get out of here.
Well, let
we
me
were
ask
just
you.
Walking around. I think it was the spark of, like, my cigarette. Like, when I lit my lighter, as soon as I did that, we heard the scream, and it started screaming more than just once.
Why do you think it charged you?
I'm not sure. Like, maybe we were in its territory, or, like, I remember walking, and as we were walking, we weren't walking with no flashlight or anything like that. So, for all we know, like, maybe we got too close to its territory. Maybe the lighter could have triggered him. I'm not too sure.
Well, when you say he charged you, how far away were you from it?
How far away? Like, 30 feet? 40 feet?
30 or 40 feet. Well, you know, when these things, if it was a 10-foot creature or a 12-foot creature, do you realize if that thing was in full motion, you know, realize how fast those things could move?
Yeah, no, I could hear it, like, just run. I could hear the stomps. That's all I could hear.
So are you a pretty fast runner?
I'm a pretty fast runner, yeah. I'm a soccer player.
Okay, all right. Because I'll tell you what, those things can outrun us. Quicker than that.
Yeah, no, we ran to the car. We were close to, like, the parking lot area where our car was, but we were still running up a field on one of the golf courses.
I see. Okay. Well, listen, it was an experience of a lifetime, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. I don't know if it will ever happen again, but it's pretty crazy that it did. I'd never pretty much thought, I've never believed in any of these kind of things.
Yeah,
I'm not much of a believer and all that, so, like, when it happened to me, I had no idea what to think. It was just, it was crazy to me. I felt like I was a crazy.
Have there been any other sightings or encounters by anybody else in the area?
I think Paul knew one farmer, actually, that used to live in that area. He said he might have seen something. I'm not too sure. I think Paul knows the story better. I'll pass you, Paul.
Okay.
It was a pleasure talking to you.
Same here, Jesus.
Hello?
Hey, Paul, have there been any other encounters in the area there?
From what I've heard, yes. One other guy, I'm not going to say his name, but he was a farmer. He lived probably like a good 20 minutes from the golf course. And I talked to him because he came in and he heard the story of what I was saying and he wanted to speak with me. And he told me his story that in the back of his farm, his father collected a lot of old cars and old farm equipment. And basically, it was a big junkyard. And that he was out there, and he was just he was bored, and he was just walking around. Forget what he was doing, making fires and thing. And then he said that he came around this old rusty car, and this thing was crouched over just behind it. And he went and he walked up behind it, and the thing turned around, and this guy's a big guy. He's about 6 foot something, and it stood up, and it towered over him. As soon as he was face-to-face with it, he just looked at it, looked at him, and he basically turned around, and he got out of there, and he called his uncle, and he called his
his father, they came out with their guns, and the thing already was gone. And when he was telling me the story, his eyes were tearing, and he was happy that he met me because he wanted to talk to someone else that had an experience. We both exchanged stories, and after that, we were really good friends. And I'm not much of a farmer guy. I'm a city boy, so occasionally I go out and I go visit him. But I didn't tell him that I was going to be on your show or anything. I haven't had any contact with him for a good month or so.
Has this encounter changed your life in any way?
Yeah, it changed the way I sleep at night. When I dream, basically, it brings me back to that exact night when that happened. And the same thing happens, like, when you certain dreams where you feel like you can't run away, that's pretty much what happens to me in my dreams. I can't run away from this thing, and Jesus isn't there to save me this time. Yeah. That night has made me research more things about the world, just to learn about this place, because it isn't what it seems. It's a completely different place at night. Pretty much what I can say.
Well, I'm sure it's not just there. It's all around this country. Listen, I want to thank you so much for taking from your time tonight and enlightening us what's really happened up there. And it's always great to hear it from the horse's mouth, as we say. And you know, we got a whole lot more show ahead of us tonight. So just push your mute button. And thank you and Jesus both for being on.
Can I make a shout out?
Please do.
I'd like to make a shout out to my family, my friends. I'd like to make a shout out to the tent, Georgie, Marcos, Brandon, Matt, and everyone else that's at the tent listening right now.
And you know what? Kudos to all of those wonderful people. Thanks so much, Paul. Let us know what's going on in that area, okay?
We will.
Thanks again. Just push your mute button. Okay, bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Paul and Jesus up there in Canada. You heard it from the horse's mouth. They've had a hell of an experience, and they'll be talking about that for the rest of their life. Marco, let's go to commercial, and we're going to talk about this for a little while tonight. Anatomy of a Bigfoot Hoax, ladies and gentlemen. Here we go.
In August 2008, there was an announcement that was heard around the globe. A promise of the end to an age-long mystery and deception that played out on the world stage. Anatomy of a Bigfoot Hoax. Now, for the first time ever, see with your own eyes and hear the true behind-the-scenes story of the hoax that gripped the world. Featuring original, never-before-seen footage. Available now at searchingforbigfoot.com.
One, they're very sick people, but you know what bothers me more than anything, Megan? These guys were in the war.
Back to you, Tom.
Yeah, thanks there, Marco. You know, ladies and gentlemen, I got to tell you. I told you we just got this thing back. It's out now for release for everybody around the world. You're all going to see it. You need to see this. It answers all the questions. I had a gag order before. I'm releasing it now, letting the world know the whole truth. You'll get to see it yourself. Get it on our website. If you don't get it there, you can get it on Amazon.com. The world wanted to know the story. They're going to get to hear it now. Now, what we're going to do is, a guy named Jim out there in Illinois, used to have a home and some property out there in Arkansas, contacted us and was very hospitable and asked if we'd like to come out because there's a lot of things out in that area. There's a good possibility our good friend Bigfoot could be.
Tom, I have a link, two links, one with his fishing limit full, and the other of a lake right next to his cabin.
It's, is that right?
Yeah, it's on www.bigfootlive.com. Right underneath Jim's heading for the show here.
Okay, fantastic, ladies and gentlemen. You might want to take a look at that. So that's what we're going to be talking about. Get to know Jim just a little bit. Without any further ado, let's get out there to Illinois and see if he's freezing cold out there also in Illinois. Jim, how are you?
Hey, Tom, how are you? Can you guys hear me okay?
Loud and clear, young man, loud and clear. How's the weather out there in Illinois?
It's a balmy 22 degrees here today, but the sun was shining. It was absolutely beautiful day, and unfortunately, I had to work all day. I was inside, but I got to look outside and see the sunshine, so that was better than a hot stick in my eye, Tom. I can tell you that. But I had a good day. I talked to some friends of mine in Arkansas today, trying to scare up some stories. One of my buddies that's had a fishing show down in northeast Arkansas, his name is Crowbar Russell. And Crowbar has had a fishing show, two or three different shows that he's had on the air for quite some time. And I asked Crowbar to see if he could scare up some stories, and he scared up a couple of stories from 45 years ago and 20 years ago and a year ago. And I've got him kind of looking around. A guy that's been hunting and fishing in that area all of his life, you know, he knows the difference between something that's supposed to be there and not supposed to be there, et cetera. And we've had some pretty good conversations. And anyway, he's looking around for us. But I sure do hope you guys decide to come to Arkansas and take a look around. The area that I'm from is a little area called Hardy, Arkansas. And it's right, we have two rivers, the South Fork River and the Spring River. And the Spring River is completely spring-fed. The spring comes up out of the ground at 9.78 million gallons of water per hour at a constant temperature of 58 degrees Fahrenheit. And then by the time it gets down to my place, it's about 72 degrees. We have walleye, crappie, trout, catfish, bass, largemouth, smallmouth. We have tons of deer. We have a development in that area called Cherokee Village, Arkansas. It's one of the first Cooper developments, and they've got two 18-hole golf courses and houses you can rent. It's spectacular. There's got seven lakes in Cherokee Village. There's about 15 private lakes in that area and two of the cleanest rivers in the country. And there's just tons and tons of area for hunting and fishing. And we've got one Walmart, so if Walmart doesn't have it, you don't need it. That's kind of the way the area is. But it's a fun place to grow up. My father grew up there. My grandfather grew up there. I grew up there. And it's just a wonderful area. And so when I contacted you, it's kind of interesting. I sent you an email asking you a question, and within 8 minutes you'd give me a call. And I really like that. I like folks that are on the ball, that are ready to get something done. And, you know, I kind of got the Bigfoot bug about a year ago. Marco, Bill, and I were talking about that, and actually it was from your movie, Searching for Bigfoot. I was sitting here, I've got Netflix, and I've got Dish Network with every channel in the world, and that ain't enough for me because I don't like watching regular TV with commercials, and so I also have Netflix, and Netflix was streaming Searching for Bigfoot, and so I sat down and watched it one night. And it amazed me. I realized that you're a no bullshit guy. I realized that this Bigfoot thing is not a bunch of crap, that it's real. And from that, I started looking at websites, and I searched around on Google, and I found all these different websites from Bigfoot Research Organization, BFRO.net, all the way through the smallest hoax sites, and I've spent hours just checking this out, reading sighting reports, and you know, these sighting reports, the folks that make these reports, there's no way they could be put together or syndicated. These folks are real. They're regular country folks. And oddly, it seems to me everybody that makes a sighting, very few people that are out looking for Bigfoot find a Bigfoot or find anything. It seems to me that most of this stuff that occurs, these sightings, these folks are walking down the road or driving down the road, or like these two fellows you just interviewed, they just happened to be out somewhere and it happened. And they're not trying to make something up or lie. And the worst, you know, there's just no way that people would do that. Now there are some people that try to capitalize on things, and you can see right through that pretty quickly. But most of these folks that make these sighting reports, are just telling the truth. And I find, as I read them, I read reluctance. I read that they really don't want to talk about it. They're either scared or they feel like that someone's going to embarrass them because what they saw, and you know, in reality, they saw something. Now every time that there's a sighting report, is it really a Bigfoot? Who knows? It could be any number of things, but they all certainly could not be untrue any more than they all could be true. And so I watched your movie, Searching for Bigfoot, and then I started thinking about some of my life experiences, and I've got a couple of them I'd like to share with you. You and I talked on the phone the other day, right after I'd emailed you, but one of them occurred back in about 1988. I was at my house down on the river. I've got a house right on the river, and it was about 2 o'clock in the morning. I was out with a buddy of mine who just a couple of years ago, unfortunately, passed away from cancer. But little buddy, we called him. His name was Glenn. Glenn and I were out on the river about 2 o'clock in the morning, and, you know, most of the great stories that people tell start off with, we were drinking. And of course, that's what we were doing. It's back in 1988. We've been out drinking and having some fun, and we were back at my house out on the river, and it's 4 or 5 miles, you know, from even a highway. It's gravel road all the way down there, and we're down on the dock. I've got a concrete patio, and then you walk down to a dock down onto the river, and we're out on the patio right next to the dock, and we didn't have any music down there, and so Glenn had pulled his Jeep Grand Cherokee down by the dock, and we turned the stereo on and opened up the doors, and we had the stereo, you know, blasting, and we're standing out there drinking and having fun and just a couple of buddies talking, no big deal. And all of a sudden, these rocks started flying all around us, and I'm talking about rocks the size of grapefruits. I mean, big rocks, big, some of them bigger than softballs. And one of them busted out the back window of his Jeep, and one of them busted out a side window, and we couldn't figure out where they were coming from. We hid behind some trees because they were just about to hit us. Fortunately, none of the rocks hit us, but I'm going to say there was 20 rocks, 25 rocks, 30, I don't know. There were a bunch, and they busted out the windows on his Jeep. And so we were near a campground. My house is near a pretty large campground called Many Islands, and so we went down to Many Islands. After the rocks stopped, we got in my vehicle, and we drove down to Many Islands and got the security guy. Now, you know, growing up in that area, I know everybody, and I knew the security guy that worked down there, and I said, hey, someone's out here throwing rocks at us, and would you come up to the house and take a look around with us? And he did. They have a golf cart for their security guy, and he came up there, and we looked around, and there was nobody out. It was 2 o'clock in the morning, and in the end, we never did find out how the rocks were coming, but they were coming from over the back of my house, and the road that runs behind my house, and I've got a 2-story hexagonal shaped log cabin. Down to the dock is about 100 to 125 yards. And so I don't know. There was no one within sight where we could see. And there are some, we've got some, our parents. We're all the guys that own property down there that own these houses, we're all second generation. Our moms and dads built these homes, and we all grew up together down there. And then, of course, all of our parents have passed away, and we're all second generation. And all those homes are obviously legacies for our children. And you know, we've got some streetlights that we had North Arkansas Electric install behind my place and the place next door. We've got, you know, we had them install them down there for us. And so there's some lighting around that area immediately around the houses, so it's not just completely dark. And we couldn't, there was no one out there that we could see. So the rocks were coming over the back of my cabin down to the patio, and that's, like I say, 100 yards, 125 yards or so down there. And you know, I don't know too many people that could throw a rock, excuse me, the size of a grapefruit, 100 yards. Now, if a fella could do that, he's probably playing football on Sunday somewhere. So, I mean, it was real. I've got witnesses, but they just, you know, they hit his Jeep and busted out two windows, and it was a pretty scary thing. Never did figure out where the rocks came from or who was throwing them. And then I had another incident just 2 years ago. I'm an avid golfer. I play golf every day that I can, and typically what I'll do is play until I can't see anymore, till it's dark. And I've done that for several years, and I was at the golf course in Cherokee Village like I am most days until dark, and I was just about dark till I couldn't see the ball fly anymore. I was driving back out to my place on the river, and it's, I'm going to say, 3, 3.5, 4 miles down a gravel road to get to my place. And as you drive down one of the roads to get there, there's a farm, and that farm has been clear cut for many years. And there's a low water bridge, and water sometimes, I'm going to say more than half the year, is flowing over the bridge. And this is October of 2008. I'm going to say roughly October 2008. It wasn't deer season yet, but it was starting to get cool. And it was about dark, so I was driving down the road coming home from the golf course, had my headlights on. And as I came down this hill and I got into this farm, this road runs through this farm, and then crossed the creek, the low water bridge. Water was a little, not a lot of water. I'm going to say 3 or 4 inches of water coming over the low water bridge. You know, I slowed down and went across the bridge in my pickup, and then I accelerated and kind of went up the next knoll, and a deer came from out of nowhere and ran right into the left front tire of my pickup. And this is an 8-point buck. Now, this deer, as I reflect on this story, could see me coming down that hill for 200 yards, maybe 250 yards. And the deer was running at full gate. I mean, it was blasting through this field. It jumped over a barbed wire fence and ran into my truck almost like it committed suicide. I've never seen anything like that in my life. I'm a country boy. I grew up out in the country, and I've never seen anything like it. So obviously there was something chasing this deer that the deer knew that if it got caught, it was over, because there's not too many 8-point bucks that are that crazy to run through a cleared field with no trees, jump over a fence, and run into a pickup truck. That just doesn't happen. I've never heard of that happening. I was running maybe 30 miles an hour, 25, 30, maybe even as fast as 35. I doubt I was going 35 miles an hour, and I had just crossed this low water bridge, so I went slow across the bridge and then drove up the hill over this knoll, and I'm going to say 50, 75, maybe 100 yards past that bridge is where this deer ran into my truck. And again, this was October, I'm going to say, of 2008. Well, like I said when we started talking, I really never really caught the Bigfoot bug, never really thought too much about it, really and truthfully, most of my life. I'd heard some stories, but didn't think too much about it. But I saw the movie Searching for Bigfoot, and then since then I've looked at these websites, and I've read these sighting reports. And then as I reflected back on these instances of the rocks flying over the back of my cabin and busting out the window, and then the other incident of the deer running through that field and running into the front wheel of my truck, for that deer, there had to be something chasing that deer. And you know, we don't really have bear in that area. I've maybe heard one story of a bear, and the guy that told me the story wasn't sure it was a bear. So now there could have been a mountain lion chasing it. Who knows? There might have been a panther chasing it. I don't know what was chasing it, but I can tell you that there was something chasing that deer. And so as I saw the movie Searching for Bigfoot and looked through these websites, it occurred to me that these instances could have been a Bigfoot. Now the habitat in that area, we've got a lot of deer, turkey. In fact, the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission says Zone 4, that's where that area is, has one of the largest turkey populations in the country. We have a very large trout hatchery on the Spring River. In fact, that trout hatchery was originally built by the Kroger Corporation. And then in 1982, we had a huge flood in Hardy in the Spring River, and the Kroger Corporation donated that hatchery to the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission. And most of the trout that are raised, that are stocked in the rivers and streams of Arkansas and sold even to some other states, are grown in that hatchery about 6 miles above my house. So we have rainbow trout, some brown trout. We have a lot of walleye. My nephew Zach caught an 18-pound walleye off my dock in the Spring River. We have great trout fishing. We have great walleye fishing, smallmouth, largemouth bass, just spectacular fishing in all the lakes and streams. We have spectacular hunting. So the habitat that we have in that area and the lack of inhabitants in that area, we have literally tens of thousands of acres of property that's just uninhabited. There are folks that own as many as 24,000-25,000 acres, single landowners that own 24,000-25,000 acres in that area, and there are no homes, there's nothing there. So it's a perfect habitat for a large animal that could very easily survive and very easily never be seen. I can't tell you how many times that I've had conversations with individuals, even deputy sheriffs, that said that people could go to that area and hide out and never see another human being for a year, and it's absolutely true. And so I think that you know, I've heard a couple of sightings. I've had some people tell some stories over time. I didn't think a lot about it, but after I saw your movie, started looking at these incident reports, I believe that could be an area that there could be a lot of Bigfoot. I believe that's an area that there are Bigfoot there. I mean, obviously, those rocks flying over the back of my house in 1988 and hitting around us and busting out the window of that truck were thrown by something pretty big to throw a rock like that far. And so that's my story.
Well, you know what? I'm sitting here listening. I'm taking it all in, and I'm loving it, and I'll tell you the reason why. First of all, welcome to the world of Sasquatch. Second of all, we've got a lot of action going on in Arkansas. The next story coming up is when Youngblood, one of my guys, Rob Price, and I was up there in Arkansas. The story got too long-winded last week and very engrossed. And when you hear some of this, you're going to blow your mind because you're not too far from there. I think I touched on it the other day when we talked.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you're going to hear it from one of my guys' mouths, right, who was there when he heard it and saw it himself. Well, what I suggest you do is, first of all, thank you very much for sharing your story with me and my listeners around the globe. Second of all, I want you to just mute yourself out and listen very closely. And third of all, we're going to take you up on your offer, and we will be out to Hardy. We will be out there and get some stuff done, and we'll investigate everything you got going. But I need you to do some work for me now. I need you to find out where there is any type of caves or abandoned mines in that area. We know that there's vegetation and there's waterways where these things can survive. And remember what I told you about the Red River.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Sure did.
Look at the topo map. You're a pretty smart guy. You know your stuff. But here it is. We're not getting much time in because the stories are getting so great. But just mute yourself out. Thanks again. We'll be talking real soon. Listen closely to this next story, okay?
I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Y'all have a great evening. Thank you, Tom.
Be blessed, my brother. Marco, why don't we go to another commercial real briefly, and then we'll bring Rob on.
Okay.
1967, my whole life changed. I went to the libraries to find out all I could find out about Bigfoot. We went out to prove that this creature exists.
I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator. You see something big like that, you figure, well, maybe it'll come charging.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized there was something special and probably Sasquatch.
Yes, Bigfoot lives.
We're looking at something that's probably over 500 pounds.
We hear screams. Breaking day, we hear these siren-type screams.
But it is satellite
and everything else. They just were too early
and
to be
frozen like a tree.
But it's manufactured.
The hands
are into the woods.
Female.
Bigfoot creature lives.
Bigfoot lives.
Right now. At www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
And it's back to you, Tom.
Thank you, Marco. You know, I'll tell you, it's people like this Jim Dawson that, and of course, Paul and Jesus, these people are, it's a breath of fresh air for me especially. I'm so tired of hearing these jerks and these idiots, but with people like this, it gives us the stamina and the oomph to go forward and not look back, because they're the kind of people I want on my team. They're really good. And I got to tell you a story there, Mr. Jim Dawson. If you thought, it's not Searching for Bigfoot, that's our company. It's Bigfoot Lives is the name of the movie. And Bigfoot Lives 2 will be coming out in the next 90 days. But the one that you need to see is The Anatomy of a Bigfoot Hoax. You should look at that one and then tell me what you think. You can go to our website and get that also. Without any further ado, my partner who's right here with me, Rob Price, Youngblood, pick up the phone, do your thing.
Guys, I'm going to pick right back up where we left off, you know, with the first story of the guy we went to interview. I left off right there at the end where they had the second encounter, and they'd already killed one previously and were in the process of hunting down and killing this one. When they said, according to this guy, was that the military came in at that point. They gunned the thing down, and the military come in, confiscated it, and they put a bad threatening on these people, let them go, and later they come in about, I think they said 3 days later, the military came back and abducted these people, like right off the side of the street. You know, they put them in the back of the van, took them to the military bunker, underground, interrogated them, beat them, just any kind of form of torture you can do to figure out and try to find out what's making this guy tick, why'd they do this. So, they release him after being held against their will for 6 days, no trial, no nothing, no police, completely informal, something like the CIA would do. Release them. And at this point in time, the man we're interviewing has gotten so nervous that he's, you know, checking out everybody that's coming in and out of this place of business. He owns the place, and he knows all the people that are in and out of there because they're regulars. He doesn't have any coming in, you know, outsiders other than me and Tom happen to be there. We're the only two people in there he shouldn't have known. And at this time, there's because of phone conversations and whatnot. And I don't know how closely everybody read the Patriot Act, but every phone call and every text and every email is read, or can be read, without a search warrant anymore. They don't have to get a search warrant to tap a line no more, nothing like that. All that's in the Patriot Act. But anyway, so just bear that in mind when you're having a phone conversation, that any time that the government feels like they need to hear what you're talking about, they can tap in and listen. So this guy is extremely nervous and is going like almost crazy, and at this point in time he cuts the conversation off and agrees that if we handle this real delicately the way he wants it handled, he'll come on and talk on a radio show, which we done. And we got through two episodes with him going through his story, and he was scheduled to be on for the third week. He did not make the third week. At such and such time, he just broke contact. He said, don't contact me, don't talk to me, or anything like this. His brother gave us the same story when we tried to call him on the phone right there from his brother, talking to him brother to brother. And he told him if he had any sense and knew what he was doing and playing with, he would just leave it alone and drop it. That's pretty much, you know, of course it wasn't said that nicely. It was actually a lot of language in there involved. But the gist of it was to leave it alone. That was what his brother said to him on the phone conversation. We were just trying to talk to him and question his brother, who happened to have been party to this event happening. So a few days roll by. Me and Chief's back on the road. And out of the blue, we get a phone call because we're starting to get some of this stuff up on the website, what we could. Could not disclose. We get a phone call from a party that's not going to state who it is at this time. He just says, look, he said, I was there. I was the fourth guy. He told you this story and whatnot. He said, and there's a lot of holes in it. He left out a lot of information that wasn't, you know, that actually happened and stuff that he didn't talk about that happened. He said, I would like to fill those holes in if you'll give me the opportunity. He said, I live off the grid. I haven't had any kind of services or anything as far as you know, 30-day service where you have to have credit or anything like that. This guy's been off the grid for the last 15 years. So he calls me and Tom up, and he's calling us from different locations and payphones and bouncing around and whatnot, and he's like, okay, if you'll meet me such and such, and he ends up dropping off directions somewhere for us to go pick up on how to get to where he's at. So we go by, find the directions, get the directions, get to where he's at, so we can meet him face-to-face and talk to him, because this is the extent he's going to hide from the government. So we're talking with the guy, and he starts filling in holes from the previous guy's story. This happened to be a friend of the two brothers and the father years ago. They had a falling out, I think they said about 6-7 years after, you know, after all this stuff happened. They had a falling out, and they lost communication with each other. But he fills in the holes that they not only, you know, some of the timing was off from the story, original story we got, such as, you know, attention to detail. I compare everything because we took notes on all of it. But the main holes that were filled in was the timing on when they were abducted and the actual time as to when the military showed up and started becoming a presence, which was not after they killed the first one. It was, in fact, only after the second one had been killed that the military actually got involved and started taking, you know, like, action as far as threatening and things such of that nature. The first time around, they actually just disposed of the body themselves out of fear that they might be some consequences, repercussions for killing something like that, because nobody, they didn't know what it was. But they did take pictures, which we have those pictures. We've got the information. We've got documents that this guy gave us, documents like documents from the FBI, the CIA, stating all parties involved and authorizing, you know, that we have given them their final warning, and if they don't adhere to this warning, that we're authorizing the CIA to, you know, use any means necessary. Extreme prejudice is the word that they were talking about. In other words, it was a hit order from the FBI, the CIA, authorizing the CIA to kill American citizens, to shut them up, because they were, you know, in violation of the Patriot Act or something like that. Which act was it? I can't remember. It was one of those acts in the state in the late 70s. But anyway, it had that on there, case document number and all that stuff, official document. How in the world this guy got a hold of it, I don't know. But I do know that it was an official document, because it's got the stamp on it, which is erased, kind of like somebody notarizing something. It had the actual stamp and the signatures of the deputy director of the CIA and the FBI, which those two signatures match up if you look back to see who the deputy directors of those two agencies were at the time that document was made. But anyway, we go through, you know, all this rigmarole back and forth between, you know, these two stories as to which one's what and what's what, trying to get the facts out of it, because both of these guys are real shady and not wanting to come completely, you know, forward with all their information because they're scared. And I can't say that I blame them, I mean, because this other one, after the second week of being on the radio show, said that these guys come to my house, and he's pretty much saying the men in black showed up at his house in a black car, unmarked, with no plates, and they come up to his house wearing, like, tuxedo business suits, you know, white-collar business suits and shades. Two guys, two agents, come to his house. They're pretty much the men in black came to give him a visit and tell him to shut up again. And anyway, at that time, he did not come back on the show. We lost communication a week later with the guy that we had to go through all this trouble to track down and find in the flesh after we found out that there is a hit list, was a hit list on him, and that's why he was running from the government, is because in that document has his full name, his aliases, and relatives, last known point of origin, all that kind of stuff. But also in the document, it discloses what was going on the property and why they killed these things and why it was okay with the government. They'd done that because these two things had escaped. And according to this document, it was a genetics research facility. And at some point in time, the military, being the only people that have the funding, number one, the finances, and the manpower, as you could say, the resources, to actually see something through as far as doing a live capture on one of these things. So they know the truth. They know what's going on. They went out there and they caught a live one and they did all kind of genetics research and they crossed it with human beings. And the two that were killed were hybrids. They were not Bigfoot, like, roaming out in the country and everything like you would actually see if you were out in the country doing that kind of stuff looking for them. It's not something like that. These things were something entirely different. And according to the document, these things became hostile, and they were much more intelligent than the normal ones because, like I said, they were crossed with a human genetically. How they done this, I don't know. I'm not a genetics researcher. I don't know how you would cross something like that. I mean, it was much more difficult than, you know, probably breeding a horse and a jackass and getting a mule. But anyway, they done it in a test tube. But they got it done, and they made two of these things, a male and a female. And it's got the code names on there for them because it's just at the top of all these documents say code things. Like code name so-and-so equals what it really is. Code name so-and-so equals what it really is. And use that as a reference back and forth through the documents. So you're going through the document reading it and have to constantly go back and find out what the code's for. But the female was named Sapphire, and the male was codenamed Lucifer. Supposedly, Sapphire was the one that attacked him that night, and this was documented, and all this stuff was documented together. This was a long document, and it's in there talking about all the details of it, and how Lucifer, you know, I mean, Sapphire did this, that, and other, after escaping from the compound where they made the thing at. And we're studying it, escaped in the wild, and, you know, and these happen to attack these guys, and this guy killed them. Okay, so they know they're mortal, they know these guys can kill them, and these guys come back and do it again. Well, here's the real kicker. These guys end up getting hired by the military, because this wasn't the only incident of this happening. This has been done before, and is apparently, according to the military, all over the world in different locations, they're doing this kind of stuff. Mixing all this stuff together and making these things. So that just happened to be two that were in the continental United States. They got contracted to kill them. They were being paid $50,000 a hit to go out and kill these things all over the world for the United States military to cover up what their mistakes were. That escaped. They, you know, because of their intellect, I guess, and their strength. They're much more stronger than humans. And just their ability to escape from things. These things are breaking loose everywhere that they're making, and they're hiring these guys to go out and kill them. Well, they know that they killed 11 for a fact, that they have these four individuals at one point in time or another between the years of 1988 and 1996 killed 11 of these things for the United States military as contractors, $50,000 pop. So that's a substantial amount of money if you do the math at the time. I mean, back then, that was a lot more money than it is now. But on top of that, the military gives them support.
Rob, hold on. I don't mean to interrupt you, son. And you're telling the story so perfect, it's just blowing my mind. I hope Jim Dawson's listening to this. This all happening in the state of Arkansas. Tell him where the lab was and what city, outside of what city. Do you remember? Underground.
I can't remember because I was told not to remember, so I never wrote it down, so I don't remember the name of the city.
Well, let me give him a reference. Jim Dawson, this was outside of Fayetteville, okay? But I'll tell you this. When we had talked the other day, Jim, you had told me about, you heard about some other things going on. Well, find out. We'll be there before you know it. And I didn't know we're this close to leaving the show right now, but son, you did an excellent job.
Well, we can take an extra 5 minutes here for Mitch.
Okay, put Mitch on because I'd love to talk to him. Thanks, son. I'll see you in a few minutes.
No problem.
Hey, Mitch. Star 7, buddy.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm here. Mitch, you out there?
Yes, I'm here.
First of all, how's Mama?
She's doing real well. Thanks to all everybody's prayers and thoughts. We got her home, and once we got her home, she started doing better than when she was in the hospital.
Oh.
So right now, she's up and able to sit in her recliner and watch TV and talk to us and stuff like that. So she's doing a lot better.
Wonderful. The prayers have been answered. You give her a big kiss for me and tell her that we sure love her and that she's back to feeling good. Have you had a chance at all to get back up there on the rim?
Yes, I have. I've been up there twice now. And things are warming up. The snow's disappearing. I'm kind of concerned about my Bigfoot Garden of Eden project. I'm hoping that the buds don't start coming out on the apple trees and so forth, and then get another freeze. I'm hoping for a bumper crop this year. We located where they're at. They're on the opposite side of the mountain that they're normally on.
Mm-hmm.
There is more of a valley that's kind of protected from the wind and rain. Very little snow there. It's a lot warmer. We found a tree that it was an old dead tree stump that probably stood 12 feet tall. And it had woodpecker holes all over in it. And right there at the base of the tree were two footprints. Like a Bigfoot had just been standing there and using a stick or something to poke in those holes to get termites or beetles or whatever was in those holes. But, my son went over and looked at them and stepped in them, and they were just about twice the size of his feet. And they had sunk into the ground a good 6 inches, so they're deep into the soil. But it was a pretty heavy creature.
Wow. Well, I'll tell you this. We're come the end of April, beginning of May, and straight through to August, we're going to be doing a lot of researching and a lot of filming, and you know that you're probably going to be along with us, and if not, we'll be out in your area doing it. We look forward to your reports. We look forward to what's going on. I'm sure that these creatures are as confused as we are with this weather pattern that's been hitting us all. It's just crazier than hell. What do you think about that? Let's just take a brief, few seconds on that.
Well, when the weather it goes wacky, it offsets their lives really much more than it does ours. We can go take shelter in our homes, but they've got to worry about food and shelter and so forth because they have to eat every day. And something like a late frost or something is going to impact their food source later on during the summer. It's going to affect them putting on weight for the winter. They really need that food. So, this weather is really racking things up.
You bet it is. Listen, got to go. Thanks so much. We'll be in touch. Kiss Mama for us and tell her the prayers are still coming on, okay?
Will do.
Be well. Till next time, America, kudos and salutations.
I want all the viewers in the world today to know that this creature is out there. I have no doubt in my mind that there is a primate, a hominoid, a biped, something that walks on two all over this country. There's an unknown species out there, and we're going to find it. We've done vocalizations. We receive something in return, answering to it. We're going to be sharing our finds with the world. Because what we've got now, no one else has. And the legend carries on by the work that we've done all these years.
Bigfoot, live in a movie
right now
at www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Marco Bill, and that's the Bigfoot Live radio show for this week. All of us on the Bigfoot Live network would like to thank Mr. Tom Biscardi and his guests for joining us tonight for an exciting evening of talk show entertainment. where you, the listeners, become a part of our on-the-air adventure. And we'd also like to thank you, our listeners, for sharing our adventure with us. Join us again next Wednesday evening for another exciting hour of Bigfoot Live Radio Show with Mr. Tom Biscardi and his team. Until then, this is Marco Bill saying good night, and be good, be safe, and be here next week. See you then.